Great. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Lambda Test AXP series. This is part of our community initiative at Lambda Test, where we are bringing you the latest innovation and best practices in the field of quality engineering and software development. I'm Manish Sharma. I'm the Chief Operating Officer here at Lambda Test, and I am privileged to be hosting, industry veteran Rituparna Ghosh, who is the Vice President and Global Head of Quality Engineering and Testing at Wipro. We'll talk about a lot of the testing best practices today, but the topic is going to be really interesting. Everybody's talking about it all over the world. Even if you're not in the tech domain, you are talking about generative AI. So today we'll be talking about the impact of generative AI in the quality engineering and the testing world. But just to quickly introduce, our esteemed guest, Ritu brings over 20 years of experience in shaping the quality engineering practices. Her leadership at Wipro has led to significant advancement in software testing methodologies, fostering a culture of innovation and collaboration. Ritu's expertise extends beyond technical domain. She's known for her commitment to mentorship and fostering diverse, inclusive workplaces. She has been helping customers and teams all over the world embrace quality engineering and testing practices. I couldn't have asked for a better guest on today's topic than Ritu. Thank you, Ritu, for taking the time and joining us here today.
Thank you for the invitation, Manish, and I'm really looking forward to an exciting conversation. Given all the buzz that generative AI has been generating, if I can use that term, over the globe for the past couple of quarters.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. As I was saying, it's not only tech people. Even my parents talk about, what is the generative AI? Kids are using generative AI to submit homeworks.
Yeah.
Funny thing, my daughter submitted her assignment. Nothing to do with generative AI. She didn't even use, ChatGPT. But the Turnitin software flagged a lot of the content that she wrote as generative AI. So I think, the discussion today will bring out testing of these models and what's been going on.
Definitely. It's a
looking forward.
Whole new brave world out there.
It's exciting. I think there are these waves of innovation that comes. There was this point in time when the .com or the web wave came. Then there was the whole mobile application wave that came. I think we are seeing a very significant shift in the whole tech industry and, how we as humans are going to engage with software. It's definitely exciting. And I would love to hear your thoughts on, the questions that I have related to this topic.
Sure.
So I have, a couple of questions. I'll keep referring to my notes. I haven't memorized everything because I want to make sure I ask all of these interesting questions that we've got from a lot of our customers and audiences as well. So jumping straight into it, Ritu, with the integration of GenAI, how do you see quality engineering landscape evolving? Mm-hmm. And what significant changes or developments do you see coming up in the QA field over the next few years?
I think it's for us in quality engineering, we couldn't have asked for a better time to be in this industry. If you look at over the last couple of years, testing specifically has undergone sea change, because initially it was all about, manual testing, and then automation started coming in. Then we had digital transformation, the entire digital wave, when you were looking at agile DevOps ways of working. How can you get feedback faster? So we said that, you've got to left shift testing, you've got to bring in automation into testing, you've got to have, predictive automation, and, how can you have AI brought into testing? And then GenAI comes in. So for us, over the past couple of years, so we've got literally in our team veterans who've seen it from the days when it was, huge manual testing teams to now teams who are just doing cutting edge stuff. So we couldn't have asked for a better time to be in this field and in this industry. I think generative AI specifically is going to have a huge impact on testing specifically. And I think testing is one of the low hanging fruits, significant, mainly because in the entire SDLC, testing has always been the first area which has gotten impacted, or where, innovation has happened. So I think that trend is definitely going to be continuing. There is obviously a load of, I don't want to use the term hype, but there are a lot of exciting things which are happening. So every day, and if you're on Twitter, and if you follow some Twitter trends or Twitter threads, at least in my Twitter feed, my top tweets every day are around, you know, what's new happening in generative AI, what has Midjourney dropped recently, what is happening with ChatGPT, etc. With all of these things, testing becomes the first as well as the last line of defense. The things that you are creating using generative AI models, are those fit for purpose? So that's where testing becomes important. You are creating applications on generative AI. Are those the right things? Testing the LLMs themselves, again, is something which becomes very important. So those are some of the changes that I predict is going to happen for you. You know, for testers, how do you really look at this new technology, new beast? How do you, I wouldn't say get it under control, but how do you equip yourself to use this better? You know, things like prompt engineering, how do you do it in a more effective way? Those are all the things that are going to happening that are going to happen as far as quality engineering is concerned. Obviously, there is this entire expectation that, productivity is going to just zoom through the roof. You will not need humans anymore. Everything is going to be autonomous, machines. So every desk will now not sit an individual. You'll just have machines and bots scurrying around the entire place. So that's the height of expectations. Next couple of quarters, I think, are going to be extremely exciting to see what really happens. Because I think if you look at the typical, Gartner's hype cycle, the trough of disillusionment is going to come a little bit sooner rather than later as compared to other technologies. But then once some of the glitches get sorted out, that's when the real fun will begin in terms of how do you really master this to ensure that you're able to get the maximum benefit out of it, use it along with the human that you have, and really make sure that you have output which is fit for purpose, output which allows you to save time, allows you to become productive in ways that you possibly hadn't even thought about earlier. That's a little bit of the way I think things are going to move.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's not going to be an overnight change, and there will be that trough of disillusionment because everybody is expecting, the world to change. Applications will write themselves, tests will run on its own. That's really not what's going to happen. I still remember, and I won't disclose how old I am in this industry, but there was a point in time when NetBeans, when it was launched, you could actually drag and drop applets, right?
Yes.
It'll generate code, and with the click of a button, it'll create an EJB, deploy it into an application server, and then you can see a hello world or a web page. And it was like, hey, then we don't need to write applications. Everything is going to be drag and drop.
Exactly.
We know how that unfolded. I think similar things will happen today. I think you touched upon a very important point, which was, testing of these LLM models, because that's the base for all of these generative AI solutions. And I remember, I think a couple of weeks back, it was all over Twitter. ChatGPT overnight just started, spitting out gibberish, right? Nobody could understand if it was English, Spanish, or whatever that was. And that got me thinking, hey, who's testing these things which are going out? So what's your view on creating these testing models for generative AI itself?
I think that's going to be extremely important. If you look at what happened with Gemini, right? And I was reading a blog, and it was very interesting. And I came to my team and I told this to them. That blog actually had saying that, couldn't they invest into a couple of testers who could actually test their output? So I think what will happen with a lot of the LLMs is that you will forget the hallucinations, which we know is going to be there. So you will have to ensure that the way you're training these models have to be, again, and I'm going to be using this term quite often, I guess, fit for purpose. But I think what we don't realize is the way you know, if you're not very clear about the strategy that you have to train these LLMs, you can inject a lot of bias, which will then screw up the output that you get. So I was, you know, and this is an old story. It's not really generative AI related, but it's more of an AI story. I'm not taking the name of this organization. So they were doing this entire recruitment drive. And what they saw that, and they used their past data to train their model. And because they had, till that time, only got profiles from men, and that to white men, their model got trained to actually reject a lot of profiles that did not fit their criteria. So we start with the right intent, but if we are not very clear to watch out over what's happening, the outcome that we get can be completely you know, different from what we started with. And I was discussing this with my team earlier this week, that especially if you look at STEM, right, the kind of disparity that exists in terms of the gender diversity, it's not a secret that, you know, women in STEM are not a common sight as yet. Of course, it's a lot more common than it was when, I guess, you and I started our careers. But there is still a divide. There is a racial divide. There is an ethnicity divide. When you train your model, all of those biases will get in. You can actually get it into a model of garbage in, garbage out. So how do you ensure that the way you're training your model, you have the right people who are training your model, and B, the output which is coming out, you have to have somebody who's looking at the output and say, hey, you know what, this makes sense or doesn't make sense. Again, for us as quality engineers, it's great, because I think people always have a lot of things to do. And the way I look at it is, you know, assurance is a term which is very closely aligned with quality engineering. We are the first and last line of defense for the customer to ensure that he doesn't get a call in the middle of the night saying, hey, you know what, P1, your product has crashed. Or, you know, it is like ChatGPT throwing up all kinds of gibberish, etc. So testers are definitely going to become very, very important. We will have to figure out ways and means in terms of how are we going to evaluate the output which comes in? How are we going to say that, hey, this is right, this is wrong? And that's where this entire thing about you will not need testers anymore. On the contrary, you will need testers who are a lot more evolved, lot more mature, lot more groomed into the ways of this specific domain, which is, you know, quality engineering. So they are actually able to look at the output and say, yes, this is right or this is wrong. So I think that's what we need to, you know, we need to work towards.
I think there would be a new discipline of testing called bias testing, which might come out.
Yeah.
You know, how do you test for these biases across different applications? Anything can happen.
Very true, very true. And, you know, we keep on talking about prompt engineering. You will have to do an assurance around that, because what's to stop your developers or what's to stop even your new testers for creating prompts which, you know, end up consuming so many tokens. So whatever you thought you were saving, you know, from a cost perspective, it actually becomes, you know, something that you had not even imagined. So those are, I think, the testing as we know today. There are going to be new roles, more evolved roles, which will come in. And as an industry, what we will have to figure out is, how do we create those kind of people? How do we create those mature individuals who are able to, from day one, look at the output? Because the output which is coming out, the model is getting itself trained on industry data, right? So I have to have somebody who is mature enough to look at that output and say, hey, makes sense or doesn't make sense. It's almost as if, you know, when I was in school, I first learned ABCD. I then learned how to construct words, then how to construct sentences, and then create an essay. And, you know, if I had stuck to writing, maybe I would have created a novel, you know, written a novel. But now I'm going to be in a scenario tomorrow where I don't have that initial grounding. Somebody throws a novel at me and say, hey, you know, tell us, is this good quality or bad quality? So how do I get myself the initial training which I had in school? In the absence of that school, how do I get at that level? So how do we train the tester of tomorrow? Because the industry, we are all saying no more manual testing. But manual testing in its way, it was very useful because it gave people that scope to learn, right? Even if you say that, do more of exploratory testing or A-B testing, only that's going to be manual. Everything else is going to be automated. But still, you write automation frameworks, teams are still able to, get themselves trained on that. But if I remove all of that and say, your tool is going to give you everything. You just say, is it fit for purpose? Is it not? Is it right? Is it not? Does it cover all the scenarios that it should have or has it not covered? If you use this output, are you having 100% coverage or are you not having 100% coverage? And I, who don't even know ABCD, are supposed to, make those decisions now. Interesting. So that's, I think, a challenge that
we'll have. Yeah, but you're right. I think the fundamentals won't change. Understanding and upskilling on top of technology will be the most important thing for testers.
Yes, definitely.
I think if I go back a little bit, before GenAI itself, we've always studied in, software engineering that unit test.
Yes.
Is the most basic and most important thing that everybody has to do.
Yeah.
And we know how many developers do unit testing, right? Nobody writes unit tests.
Right.
So, I was lucky to get a peek into Copilot and GenAI a couple of years back. And one of the most interesting thing that I saw too was how GenAI models can help you write unit test cases. So I think this whole Copilot model is really good because it will boost productivity, as you said, so that, you can write more code and the unit test cases get generated. But I think there's also the other side. You talked a lot about the manual testing. When I'm talking to customers and I ask them, hey, why are you still doing manual testing? And one of the answers that I used to get was, hey, because we've not been able to find a lot of talent who could come and write automation test cases. So there was always this gap from a scaling perspective. And I do see generative AI starting to help, at least from a baseline perspective, helping you get that starting point, that template of, writing these test cases. Do you see that happening a lot?
Yes, that is definitely, let's look at the developer and the tester both. So one of the biggest things which I think test developers or engineering teams today don't take enough of advantage of, which is the entire thing around test-driven development. I mean, it's such a fantastic philosophy. People don't do TDD. And when you talk to clients, one client that told me that, if my developer writes unit tests itself, so I'll be very happy. So yes, I think that definitely is going to happen, where the developers are going to be able to do that. And the entire skills issue which we had, because, you don't have enough of people. So here you have this entire system which is creating a lot of these automated tests. And it's like a marriage made in heaven. So in fact, that's one of the things that we talk about, saying that why do you spend time in doing that? Here is something which is available. Look at a user story. It's just going to be throwing up the test scripts, etc. But as I said, you will need to ensure that you have the human in this entire loop who is checking whether the output is wrong, right or wrong. So even if I assume that, garbage hasn't gone in, you will have some garbage along with the good thing which is going to be coming out. So separating the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, that has to happen, and the human will have to get in there. So the entire thing which clients face, that, I don't have enough of people doing the automation, doing the test automation, that will definitely get addressed. Today, I have senior folks who can look at the output. But tomorrow is what I am more, and as a leader, I am more concerned about, because tomorrow the thing is going to be, I don't have enough of people who can who can really look at our output from a GenAI a solution and then say whether it is right or wrong. And then if you have a situation where somebody looked at the output in a wrong way and it created a huge mess, and in our industry, you know, today with the way internet has pervaded as well as Twitter, bad news spreads so fast. You know, Gemini, within a couple of hours, everybody knew what was happening. And if that happens, and that is going to happen, we run the risk of the entire thing going the other way, saying that, forget about it. Let's focus on what we knew, tried and tested. But even if that doesn't happen, and as I said, over the next 4 or 5 years, if you look at the entire model, which is there in the industry, and I'm going to be talking a lot about the outsourcing industry specifically. The model that we have of talent is we take talent from the colleges, we train the talent over a period of time, and in the next 2 to 3 years, they really become mature individuals who end up adding significant amount of value to the entire process. Because obviously in the first year of their coming out, they're going to be still in the learning phase. In the next 2 to 3 years, if you get into this entire thing, I don't need a tester because my solution is giving me all of that output. Where do you have the talent flowing in? How do you address that? And this is going to be having, a multifold impact on the global IT industry as well, because globally, there is a lot of talent which, you know, goes from India. Plus, even, you know, in their colleges, in their universities, you know, when they also have this, you know, people from colleges coming into work, it's going to be the same challenge which they will face as well. Something which, as industry leaders, all of us seriously need to think about in terms of how are we going to be addressing this, not only in terms of testing, even if you look at development, right? Great. A good developer tomorrow becomes a great architect, right? Because you do not become an architect who can design, let's say, a banking platform on day one. You learn, you do things on your own, you learn, you see how things work, and then you enhance yourself. How are you going to get those great architects of tomorrow? If you are saying that, you know, it's only my solution is going to do, my tool is going to do everything, and then I don't need anybody. Interesting conundrum. In fact, you know, one of the things which I think organizations need to also think through on this, and as organizations, I mean the business organizations or the customers that we cater to, there is going to be, and that's something which we see today, whether it be a developer or whether it be a tester, there is a huge amount of cognitive load that's on these guys. It's intrinsic load in terms of what's happening new as far as my domain is concerned. There's a lot of extraneous load, new tools coming every day, something called DevOps. I have to do everything. I've been told you run it, you fix it, you do all kinds of things. You know, I have to have 10 hands and everything. And then I'm really not able to understand business. So tomorrow with GenAI, I think a lot of the cognitive load will go down because you'll have systems which will do a lot of things for you. So it will then give, whether it be a developer or whether it be a tester, it will give them a lot of time to really understand what is happening on the business process and then give their inputs and insights in terms of how can the business process be improved further? How do you bring in more checks and balances such that, you know, what you finally go get out into the ship to the market is absolutely great. It will give them a lot more time that, you know, the kind of signals that you're getting when we say that, you know, build fast, fail fast, learn from the failure. A lot of the fail fast, and I've seen people say that, yeah, I know it's a tech debt, but I need to hit the market. So that's okay. I will live with that for the time being. So you will now have the ability and that time to really focus on some of those and reduce the tech debt that you have, which will have a multifold impact in terms of if you're reducing tech debt upfront, you'll have, or if you're not building up tech debt, you'll build a lot more of a sustainable product So resilience, sustainability, green, whatever you talk about it, a lot of those are going to be improving as well. So I think some of those things are what organizations will have to think through, because I think it's not only about I'm going to do things cheaper, I'm going to do things faster. I think what the bigger thing will be, I am going to build a product which is right first time, because I'm actually able to do that fail fast and get those inputs and make those changes. So yes, I can possibly do it a little bit faster, not a little bit, a significant amount faster, but it may or may not be cheaper from that perspective. But can I hit the time? Can I improve on my time to market? Can I ship into production earlier than what I was doing yesterday? Definitely. That's definitely going to happen.
Yeah, well, those changes are happening. And I think you're in a very unique vantage position when you're talking to customers across industries, across geographies. You know, would love to hear what are the real life examples in the quality world that customers are starting to experiment with.
I think for a lot of our customers, there are some of our customers, and a lot of this we are seeing in spaces where there is a lot of speed expected. So whether it be retail, whether it definitely insurance and banking, where the market itself is changing so fast. So we are seeing a lot of our large customers starting to experiment with this. Very interestingly, we are seeing a lot of our healthcare customers experiment with this. So whether it be, you know, having their own version of, you know, an OpenAI or ChatGPT, etc., or, you know, building their own LLM, training it. So there are different kinds of experiments which customers are doing. In the testing space, we are now working with a whole host of customers globally. I mean, in Australia, in Europe, in the US. And the biggest thing which we are able to demonstrate to them, that the entire thing, that whether it be around a web application or whether it be even around cards products, there are multiple use cases that we look at. You know, of course, test data management, test data generation is one of the most common use cases. The second use case, which is my personal favorite use case, is in terms of, you know, if you look at your user stories, how can you really have your test cases designed them and, you know, get into and use that to test your user stories and see whether things are making sense or not. So I'll give you one example. This is a client in the West Coast that we were working with. And one of the most common things which clients say is that, show us that it works. So we took this particular user story. It was a cards product. I think it was for an Oracle implementation which was happening. And it was a, you know, there was pure application testing. So we're testing the application. And we took that particular product and we generated around 150 test cases. And this took about an hour and a half to have to do. And then we went back to the customer and we said that before we tell you what happened, how long did it take your tester to actually do it? So the customer said that, you know, for this particular user story, because it's a fairly complex user story, we were working on it for quite some time. So I had, if I look at the effort spent, it was about 10% days of effort which the tester had to spend, because he had to talk to various business users and, you know, understand the business process, interact with different people, etc. And then we went and said, hey, you know what? We took 1.5 hours. We got out the same output that you did. So those are the things which are exciting customers a lot. Of course, the things which customers are bothered about is in terms of, you know, what happens to security? Is this, you know, what will I, who will do the training? So a lot of things, especially with testing, given the amount of data that exists, our philosophy is that you really don't need to train an LLM for your testing needs specifically. You can look at whatever is available, in, you know, whatever are the LLMs which are there in the market and build on top of that. But yeah, you know, that is the security, integrating that. Those are the kind of, you know, challenges which the customers are thinking through. But everybody is very excited in terms of how do you integrate this? How do you really look at it? whether it be from a development perspective, whether it be from a testing perspective. Tell us about the use cases that you are working with. Collaborate with us. So there are, you know, one set of customers that we work with, which are big, you know, big customers by their own rights, you know, have been on, you know, really adopting the modern ways of working or new ways of working. And those customers we end up collaborating with, which is in terms of, you know, we've got because a lot of those customers have very senior leaders at their end who have obviously, you know, they're also trying out new things. So that becomes a collaboration model that we end up doing. There are another set of customers who are like, yes, this is great. If you have something already done, show us that it works and come and do it for us. I think you can either build the entire car for them, or they can rent the car from us, or, you know, or they can say that, you know, we've got everything. We will do it. We need a couple of experts from your end, you know, to be a part of our team. So there are different models. But I think one thing which we are seeing is everybody is extremely excited to exploit what this new technology can do for them.
Well, I'm sure. I think, to be honest with you, I foresee in the next few quarters that overload turning into something else, because suddenly every application is GenAI enabled, right? Your operating system is GenAI enabled, your ERP is GenAI enabled, your CRM is GenAI. There's so much of GenAI, it's going to get super confusing as a user. I don't know what's going to get tested here, by the way.
So I think one good thing is, you know, we will have a very happy next couple of years.
Absolutely.
And in fact, you know, I know my team is working with Lambda Test as well, you know, in terms of a solution for clients who are getting into the entire migration or modernization. So for us, a lot of those things, you know, a lot of those clients who are going under a, you know, very large modernization, you know, initiatives of their own. And I think today it's a lot less of only migration. It's a migration modernization which happens together. So there is a lot less of just pure lift and shift. And in those cases, you know, the solutions that we are building along with partners like you, I think those are things which are really going to be a differentiator for us. Customers are appreciating a lot of what we are doing. And sky's the limit, at least from a business perspective. I'm gonna have your, you know, borrow your optimism, Manish, that things will not be as what I'm presuming. There are going to be you know, new roles which will get created. I think from a talent perspective, what will thus become very important for talent, and I keep on telling this to my larger team as well, that you have to be very, very focused in terms of understanding the trends in the market and get into this continuous upskilling of yourself. I read a very interesting tweet today. So there was this gentleman who had just been let go of from one organization. I'm not going to be taking the names. And he said that, you know, 20 years of devotion to this organization, and I've just been fired because I now have skills which are not relevant anymore. So if you look at talent today, I think that's one of the things which, and I keep on telling this to youngsters, that ensure that you're constantly upskilling yourself and you're constantly employable, because I think we have moved out of that era where we were like, yeah, I've learned something new. This is going to be holding, you know, taking me for the next 5 years, and 5 years later, I'll figure out something else. The change of pace is really mind-boggling right now.
Okay, I think in the tech industry, you definitely have to. If you're not in the tech industry, you have to go in more, because tech is going to disrupt anything that you're doing anyway. But it definitely is an interesting time. I think the fundamentals don't change, as you were saying. You know, when I look at you and your team, you are the trusted advisors to customers, right? And the trusted advisor concept is because of the experience you have in working in this space. So there's no amount of GenAI or autonomous testing that can solve for, you know, that experience. I think that's going to be critical for teams as they scale.
definitely. I think in terms of also, you know, showing your battle scars. And that's one thing which we have seen, you know, to be real differentiator, because nobody wants to be a guinea pig. So when we talk with our clients, and we really have experts or SMEs and, you know, who've gone through those failures, who've gone through those successes, who are then going and telling the client that, you know what, I've seen this. You're struggling with this problem. These are the five times I've seen a similar problem. And these are, you know, at times, you know, there might be a case where I've tried to solve it in five different ways. So I think that's what also makes the trusted advisor piece, you know, happen for us. And I think we've been very lucky, 25 years in the industry. I think in the quality engineering space, we have been almost a pioneer of sorts, doing a lot of the first time in the industry things. But what it makes is, you know, it makes us even hungrier to ensure that we're constantly upping our games, and working with partners like you definitely ensure that we keep on honing ourselves and sharpening our trade. Because the kind of new thinking that you guys bring onto the table are obviously things which allow us to think differently, think out of the box, and then ensure that the partnership is a win-win all around. So yeah, those are some of the interesting things that we are seeing now.
Yeah, optimistic times. As I say, customers are confused. We definitely have to go and help them. Everybody's confused. What's going to happen? But I think... there was an interesting point one customer made. I was talking to them a couple of weeks back, and I asked them, hey, are you using all of these code generation tools for writing your tests and writing code? They said, yeah, we played around with it. It's good. But they shared a very unique problem, which sort of, you know, blew my mind. They said, you know, a lot of these models have been trained on 2020 data or 2021 data or 2022 data. And the world we're in from software engineering perspective, there is a new version or minor version of a language or a framework that comes out. So if I'm using, you know, language X version 9.2.3, a model has been trained on version 8.7.4, right? So that model will always try to keep up with what is happening today. I find that to be very interesting and sort of like an indicator of what's going to happen in the future on how are these models going to keep catching up.
Right. Oh, I think very true. And, you know, just goes to what I was saying earlier. How are you training the thing? You know, with all of the kind of changes that's happening is going to be very, very critical. So think of a scenario, right? You're using a version which has been trained by X, and then it keeps on learning from what people are doing, and the people are doing the wrong things. So the language keeps on learning the wrong things, not realizing that it is wrong. And the people who are using the output are using a wrong output. So it's like almost like a vicious cycle. So I think what the industry will also need to figure out, because what you just mentioned, right? It will become a fairly expensive proposition if one says that, you know, every 6 months or every 3 months, something is happening and I continuously need to keep on changing. Hence, it is, and I realize what you said, that you will not get into a situation where the language or the bot or the tool takes care of everything. While everybody wants to believe that, you know, everything will be autonomous, but you will have to have the human at the center, right? And I think we will have to figure out how that human is at the top of his or her game. So cost, the quality of my output, the speed at which I am getting all of this, and then the value that I'm getting at, you know, at the intersection of all of these three. The ideal thing is if the value is great, which means my return on investment is fantastic. That's the sweet spot. But if any one of these are out of balance, the value which I'm going to get is obviously going to be a lot lower. And then I'll have to look and see that what is the ROI that I'm getting And thus, does it make sense to even go down this path in a very, very aggressive manner? I guess there will be, you know, some pioneers in the industry who will solve this as well. And yeah, we will always be around to ensure that whatever they're turning out, it is, again, as I said when I started, it is fit for purpose.
Well, I think that was a very important point you made, which was on, you know, TCO and ROI, because customers always look at that. There's a lot of technology available. Forget about Gen AI. Just regular technology, there's so much available, but sometimes it just doesn't make sense to do it because sales or returns don't justify it. So I think these models will also evolve on how Gen AI will impact profitability or growth or all of these things.
Absolutely. For example, and we've done some analysis. So there is a particular, so let's say you have a, and I'll talk about only the testing part. Let's say you have a very small testing team and your program is, you know, going to be, let's say it's not going to be a long running program. It doesn't make sense to say that, you know, I'm going to be investing in Gen AI, unless at an organization level, you've already done something. From a return perspective, it doesn't make sense. Let's assume that you are in an industry which is not that fast moving. You have a very fixed window of release. There's a fixed timeline. Every 3 weeks, every 3 months, let's say you're going to deliver something into production. So you don't need to have a release on demand kind of a model. Then you say that, you know, I'm only going to look at these new ways to see, am I building for quality? Am I building for resilience? Am I doing right first time? And thus, does it make sense to make a heavy investment into a technology like, and I'll call it technology for the time, being into a new tech like generative AI? I think those are the things which businesses will end up grappling with, because the value versus the cost versus the ROI equation, if you don't get it right, you can end up burning up a lot of cash. It's great for us, but you can end up burning a lot of cash and it might not be giving you the kind of returns that you're looking for. So would not make business sense.
The trough of disillusionment, as you rightfully said in the beginning of this conversation. I think we're almost at time, but I would leave one question for you to answer. There's a lot of changes going on. You know, what should testers across disciplines, you know, sort of look forward to? What should they be looking at doing right now to embrace this change that is already happening?
I'm going to give a little bit of a, you know, maybe a little bit of a cookie cutter of, answer to start with, and then I'll elaborate on it. Two things. There has to be openness towards whatever is happening. A lot of times, and even today, I've seen testers who get into this thing that my job is only testing. I'm not bothered about what is happening otherwise, right? I've tested anything else, developer's problem, somebody else's problem. A tester and developer, even if the wall does not completely disappear, they're going to be working in a very, very collaborative manner. When you're doing that, you have to have a change in mindset that this entire thing is my problem. It is not only about the final testing. I'm not somebody who appears at the end. So if I'm doing this entire left shifting, I need to be open to understand from business what is their thought process. Why are they doing what they are doing? I need to have the ability to raise my hand and say, hey, you know what? It does not make sense. I need to have the ability to think of, okay, functionally, if this is what you're looking for, but non-functionally, what does it mean? What are your all of your litties, from a scalability, from a usability, from a, you know, test performability, all of those things. What does it mean? How many users are this going to be, is this application going to be rolled out across? How many countries? Do I need to look at different languages, which I think possibly one would end up doing. But a lot of time, I've seen testers who just don't even think of asking questions around the non-functional requirements, because their thing is, yeah, the PO will have thought of it. If the PO has not thought of it in the story, why do I need to look at it? So those are the things, you know, those are the changes in the mindset which the tester of tomorrow has to do. He has to be able to raise his hands and say, this is my perspective, right? look at security. Today, testers don't look at security. So there is some security expert. He is going to come and do something. And then again, you know, the developers will figure out if they have to change their code. It's not that. You're a part of the, you know, you're an extended arm of the business. You have to think through that if the business wants to hit a particular date for their product as far as time to market is concerned. And if you know that these things are things which can be a difference between make or break, you have to tell all of that to your developer. You have to tell that to your PO. I'll give you a simple example. We worked with this particular client who was developing a new POS application. Their old application was good, but they wanted to move to a new technology, etc. It was about almost a 1.5 year development cycle following Agile. Everything happening textbook, right? They had not looked at any of the NFRs. When they rolled, and they had done interim releases, so everything was working perfect. When they rolled it out across their multiple warehouses, within 5 minutes, it crashed. And I was like, how is this possible? How is it that nobody looked at, you know, you looked at your NFRs in terms of the thing which we consider so basic? How is it that developer missed it? How is it that even a tester missed it? Those are the kind of change in mindset that one has to look at. And then with all of this, which I just talked about, the tester of today has to have along with it what I like to call the growth mindset, which is how do I constantly ensure that I'm not boxed into my current role, but I'm understanding even if I'm not learning. Because as you rightly said, Manish, the role will morph into something else. If I'm not readying myself for it, when the role morphs, I will find that I knew what I knew. I don't know what's next. So, you know, that famous quote, what got you here will not get you there, will become very, very true. So that's what the tester of today will have to figure out. Of course, in the testing area itself, there, you know, all of it is not going to get disrupted. But if one thinks that I'm going to look at only this, right, we end up talking about the entire I to T, you know, the T-shaped developer or the T-shaped tester. All of that is going to become even more critical in today's age. So I think that's what the tester of today, tomorrow has to think about. This is a, you know, I can talk almost, you know, the entire day. Yeah. This is a topic which is very, very close to my heart because I don't think people get enough of that mentoring, especially testers who are just entering the workspace. Unfortunately, with COVID happening, a lot of them possibly have always worked from home. They have not had the opportunity to learn from others, to learn from, you know, their seniors. Those are the things which people, whether it's a developer or it's a tester, they need to look out for those kind of things because it is very easy to get completely disrupted. And I'll end with a quote, with a tweet of Elon Musk. He's apparently saying that by next year, Gen AI is going to be smarter than any human. So, again, it's not all doomsday. But
I am not too optimistic about that, by the way. I don't think that is possible. I don't think so.
Because I think empathy is something which is obviously extremely critical. And, you know, if you read Simon Sinek, he has a very, very interesting perspective about, you know, the new generation, you know, the XYZ, whatever they're called.
Yep.
And how they require more mentoring, etc. And if I look at the new testers, you know, that's something which is even more critical for them because I don't think they are having the great thing that we had when we started our careers, which was learning from others, really becoming a part of a community, becoming a part of a tribe, somebody whom you see every day, you know, you go to coffee with, you stand next to the water cooler and say, hey, you know what? I've got this problem. Can you tell me how I can solve it? So that's another thing which I think, you know, the tester of today has to be aware of what they decide to do. People will figure out new ways of doing it. But they have to be aware that these are the things which are going to be extremely important and critical. And I think all of this, if I encapsulate it, it's all about having that growth mindset. Today is the time when it's really, really important that you don't get stymied within your own box, and you really start looking and exploring different things.
Jenny, I will be an enabler in all of this to learn a lot more.
Yeah.
With that, thank you very much, Ritu, for sharing your experiences and insights. Truly appreciate you taking time out during, you know, the weekday. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Manish, and thanks to your entire team. I do hope, your bigger team finds this useful, and I look forward to working more closely with you guys in the coming few months.
Thank you. I think community always loves to hear from experiences, so I'm sure they will appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for joining us here today, and looking forward to having you next time around as well. Thank you.
Thank you.